carved out success by their own definition. I'm David Cataby, best-selling author and entrepreneur. And an update on the new and noteworthy status of the show. It looks like we've actually fallen out of the new and noteworthy in the iTunes store, and this is probably because the show has been around for a few months, so isn't really new anymore. We had a great run at it, though. Love Your Work climbed as high as number one in the business category. But it would still be nice to get some new listeners here to keep the show on a growth trajectory, which would keep getting great guests on the show. Anytime I ask someone to be on the show, they have to weigh the time commitment with how much exposure they'll get on the show. So it helps a lot if I can tell someone we get a bunch of downloads. These are really busy people who are being generous with their time. And not everybody accepts the invitation. Now, I don't want to throw him under the bus because I admire his work so much, but Seth Godin is just one example of someone that I didn't manage to get on the show. So there are a few ways you can help. I think the best way at this point is Product Hunt. Whenever a new episode comes out, I submit it to Product Hunt's podcast category. So if you look out for the show there when new episodes come out, and it's looking like Thursdays might be the release days for these shows, just go upvote the show, and that will definitely help attract listeners. Beyond that, do you have any friends who listen to podcasts? Share your favorite episode with a friend you think who will enjoy it, and that will help a lot. And finally, supporting the sponsors helps. I'm really selective with my sponsorships, and I only allow sponsors that really hit a sweet spot of a good product and relevance to the audience. So right now, good sponsors are Treehouse, who is offering a free trial at cataby.net/treehouse, and Audible, who is also offering a free trial at cataby.net/audible. So simply by signing up for either of those free trials, you'll be supporting the show. And that's the only way I get paid from those sponsorships. I'll just go ahead and tell you to what degree. In the case of Treehouse, I get $3 if you sign up for a free trial. And with Audible, I get $5. If you end up liking those services enough to pay for them, then I would also get an additional share of the revenue. So if you've been considering either of those trials and would like to support the show, now you have an idea of the impact you'll be having. It doesn't sound like a lot, but if everyone who listened to the show tried out those services, it would go really far towards hiring editors and show notes services and improving the show. Today's guest is Manish Sethi, who is founder of Pavlok. Pavlok is a wristband that gives you an electric shock that helps you break bad habits. And it's a crazy idea, so it's definitely gotten a lot of attention. Pavlok has been featured on Good Morning America, The Colbert Report, and Jimmy Fallon. In our discussion, we talk about how I used Pavlok to break my bad Facebook habit, and I can tell you it's extremely effective. Manish is a great example of someone who has taken what he used to consider his weakness and turned it into his superpower. He's always struggled with focusing, but he's found ways to cope with that and harness the creativity that is a product of that lack of focus. And we talked a little bit about focus versus creativity, or how focus affects creativity, in the discussion with John Kunios, one of the earlier episodes. John Kunios is a neuroscientist who studies the neuroscience of insight. And you're going to find relatable things in this conversation if there's anything that you've ever felt was your weakness, which probably everybody has those things. Manish has learned to surround himself with people who fill in his gaps, and Pavlok is an obvious product of his struggle with his attention. So here's the interview. I'm here with Manish Sethi, founder of Pavlok. Manish, what is Pavlok?
Pavlok is a wearable device that helps you reduce cravings and break bad habits.
And I asked that question, but I mean, obviously I already knew what Pavlok is because, and I have to thank you actually, because you have saved me a ton of time over the last month. The story is I bought a Pavlok and I wanted to reduce non-productive Facebook use. And I define that as I get on Facebook and you scroll. You're looking at stuff you've already seen. You're not getting any new information. You feel like you want to be doing some other work, and that you're just stuck on Facebook. And so I shocked myself a few times with the wristband, and you know, when I was feeling that craving, and I literally haven't looked at the Facebook timeline for more than a couple items for more than a month.
It's pretty amazing.
So
it's pretty amazing.
What happened? The funny thing to me was that I just didn't feel.
Just goes away.
The craving just stops popping. Went away.
Just disappears. It's magic. It's fascinating. It's like having a baby and then finding out your baby is like growing up to be smarter than you are. And you're like, whoa, look at all these cool things it does. I had no idea that it would do it this way. So the backstory of Pavlok is that I used to have an addiction to Facebook, right? And I used to hire a girl whose job was to sit down next to me. And every time I went on Facebook, she would slap me in the face. And I wrote a blog post about it that went really viral. And my productivity, of course, skyrocketed when she was there.
Wait, let's stop for a second here, okay?
Yeah.
You hired a girl to slap you in the face.
Yeah, and it was all for productivity purposes and nothing more. And but really, realistically, it's like hiring an accountability partner. It's like hiring a gym trainer, right? You hire somebody to go and make you do the thing that you commit to doing.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to pre-commit to something, and it's really hard to actually achieve that goal in the moment because of the deluge of distractions that exist in our current day and age. And that girl, Kara, tended to be the person who was pulling me out of that distraction mode. A tap on the shoulder would lead to a slap in the face. Whatever it was, it got me back on track, and I measured my productivity. I used this app that would track my productivity, and I my score went from 28 or 30% or something to 98% when she sat down next to me.
Wow.
And so I wrote a blog post about this, and then the post went viral, and I called up a friend and I said, yo, why am I paying her? We should make a dog collar that zaps me every time I go on Facebook. And my friend is like, yo, let's go to Radio Shack. And so we did, and we went to Radio Shack, and we bought an Arduino, and we ripped apart a dog collar, and like 6 hours later, we had this little prototype, and it was set so that every time I went on Facebook, the device was zapping me. And I made this video, and I was about to post it on my blog, and I knew it would go viral again, and then I said to myself, this is actually really interesting. There's a million devices out there tracking what we do, and this one's changing what I do. Maybe there's something deeper there. Maybe it's not just a viral gag post. Maybe it's a real product. Maybe it's something that's going to really change the way I behave. And so I tried to get it made, got turned down a lot of places, eventually got invested in by this incubator in Boston that put in some money and gave me a year of office space in a hardware facility and helped me get my idea from idea to prototype. And basically, I thought that the whole design of this was about making me – the whole company message was about habit change. And it wasn't clear back then. I was very deep into forming habits. I had been studying habit psychology ever since I studied at Stanford. I'd written blog posts about this. And it's very hard to get the distinction between breaking bad habits and forming good habits in the brain. They're very different parts of the brain. They operate in different ways, and the attitude towards changing these two behaviors has to be taken with a different approach. But I didn't know that back then. So the whole idea was focused on this forming new habits company. Pavlok was going to lock to your wrist. It was going to vibrate, beep, and zap you when it was told to by a automated trigger. If I go on Facebook, it would start to zap me. If I'm unproductive based on rescue time, productivity score, it would start to vibrate and then zap me. If I don't go to the gym, it'll zap me repeatedly and I can't take it off, and I'll do all these punishment things. And about a year and a half into our company, we discovered the concept of aversion therapy. And this is one of those stories that in retrospect, it was
obvious.
Wait,
hold on a second. It took you a year and a half of doing this before you discovered aversion therapy?
A year and a half. We were halfway into our Indiegogo campaign.
Oh, so you just stumbled upon this. And then
halfway in the middle of our Indiegogo campaign. We had no idea what we had.
Did somebody send you a note and was like, hey, this is cool. It's aversion therapy. And how did you find out?
Like, we had – basically, I found this article about aversion therapy a long time ago, but I never really read the studies.
Yeah.
And then one night I was just like – I mean, I'll tell you offline what happened exactly. But I reread one of the studies I'd read on using Zap for quitting smoking. And then I read the whole study, and then I read it again, and then I Googled on Google Scholar the word aversion therapy, and then 21 clinical trials popped up. And that was where I was like, holy crap, all the 21 clinical trials in that evidence booklet in the box that you have. We discovered those, and I was like, wait, hold on. Self-administered electric shock for 5 days only 5 days while smoking a cigarette for 20 minutes a day, that's 100 minutes of therapy, led to a greater than 50% cessation rate a year later. Wow. And I compare that to nicotine patches and quitting cold turkey for smokers. Quitting cold turkey has a 5% success rate. Quitting with nicotine patches has a 7.5% success rate, or 50% more productive than quitting cold turkey.
Yeah.
And our 5-day trial, the 5-day trial at Use Shock found a 55% success rate a year later for heavy smokers. And that's crazy. That was mind-boggling. And then when I started Googling, it was nail biting, it was obsessive compulsive disorder, it was some types of depression, it was gambling, it was heroin, it was marijuana addiction, it was prescription drugs, alcohol, it was drug after drug after drug after drug after drug, habit after habit after habit after, after habit. And all of them were done in the same pattern. It was 5 days of doing the bad habit on purpose while manually administering an electric zap. And I was like, holy crap, maybe we aren't a forming habit company. Maybe Pavlok doesn't need to know. Maybe we've been sitting on the answer for over 2 years with just a self-administered device, and the software isn't that important. Mm-hmm. Maybe it doesn't need to know. Maybe you need to know. And we started testing it, and lo and behold, it was exactly right, except that in the old studies, you couldn't take the device home. So the clinical rates were about 55%. We did a trial with UMass Boston where the patients were allowed to take the Pavlok home and zap away the urge whenever they have a desire, and it led to a 75% success rate.
Wow.
Smoking cessation. Smoking cessation.
That is a nearly impossible habit to kick.
Yeah, it's nearly impossible if you use the current methods, which try to go after the nicotine craving, which is not the problem. It's the habit.
Right.
They're not focusing on the right part. We have some evidence that shows that tobacco companies knew about this, but they labeled it as not consumer friendly back in the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. So anyway, this was a big breakthrough moment for us where we said, hang on, maybe we can actually just hyper-focus on breaking bad habits instead of forming habits. And so that's kind of the story of like the Breaking Bad Habits product. We realized that it's as simple as a self-administered zap.
Yeah.
Actually,
I just wanted to backtrack before it sounds too much like a Pavlok commercial. I paid pretty much full price. We're friends. I think we're friends, Manish, but I paid like pretty much full price for this Pavlok. I think there was a discount going on at the time that everybody else was getting, and I got that. It was like,
sorry, bro.
But I mean, it's good because actually then somebody was asking me on Twitter because I was marveling at how quickly I was able to get rid of my Facebook habit. And they were like, well, is it worth the price of admission? I can't remember what the price was, but it might have been $150 or $200 or something at the time. But then I was just like, well, yeah, I saved myself from using hours and hours of Facebook.
Yeah.
And
it's funny.
So it was very valuable. And I guess I think a lot of people ask me, they're like, well, how does it know you're using Facebook? And for me, it was just I just would allow myself to feel that sort of sense of anxiety that you feel right before I use social media in a circumstance where I don't actually have any reason to. And I just shock myself. And there was something, and I did that, I think, 3 times. There was something really amazing that happened. Also, as soon as I shocked myself, I felt this sort of rush of or exhilaration where I put down my phone and I got up and I started doing dishes, or I changed the light bulb that was out. I swept the floor. I started doing physical things instead of escaping into my mobile device, which for me was my problem, my big thing that I want to get rid of. And actually, so my Pavlok honestly has been sitting in the drawer for a month now, so I might need to use it at some point in the future if the habit returns, but it's been pretty amazing.
Yeah, and that's the storyline of it. Our whole product model is this. We're not in the revenue business. We're not in the making a lot of money business. We're in the breaking bad habits business. And the majority of bad habits are broken within 5 days. And we have a 30-day – actually, now we have a 6-month return policy. And this isn't a sales pitch. It's that the units that we give to people, we don't mind if you send them back to us. Later on this year, we're instituting a policy where break your bad habit, just as long as you report it, no problems at all on our end. And all units that are returned or exchanged, we donate to a homeless shelter or an addiction clinic or a facility for people in need. Because our one goal of the company is to break 5 million bad habits within 5 years and to cure addiction by 2030. And I think that we have a key to quitting addiction. Mm-hmm. And I believe that money will come afterwards. But if we can cure addiction, we don't need to worry about that problem. What we have been doing, though, and what you don't even know about, are the smart features that we've started adding. So, like, we just released a productivity Chrome extension. Dude, this is so cool. Okay. So, I can actually share my screen if you want to see it.
Okay. We'll have to describe very, very closely what it is that you're showing me.
I think I can share it right on Skype.
For the listeners, you know, we'll have
sure to, for listeners. Okay, cool.
There's people listening to this. I'm recording this conversation, Manish. Did you know that?
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought we were just having a call, man. Did you see what happened on the right? You've opened too many tabs.
Yeah. Okay.
That? I just got shocked 3 times. So every time I open up more than 15 tabs, it starts to zap me. If I open up 14, it'll vibrate. 15, it beeps. 16, mm-hmm. it zaps. I can plug in websites I want to block, like Reddit or Facebook. And if I go on those websites, it'll start to zap me.
This is all the Chrome extension.
It's all just a Chrome extension. And it actually works pretty effectively without a padlock. It just starts telling you, hey, get off if you don't have it. But so if I go on Reddit, I think it'll start zapping me every 15 seconds for being on it. So we're trying to build this system out where it actually does start. I'm already my eyes are instantly drawn to like the pictures on Reddit. Mm-hmm. It just gets you so fast. So we started that. Now we're trying to bring back in these smart features that people so desperately crave for. I'm going to turn the screen off. So what we've done is now we're creating specific, we're going down specific habits. We found that there are specific things that our users want. The number one habit is sugar or unhealthy eating. The number two habit is smoking. The number three habit is waking up late, sleeping in, and productivity. They're kind of combined. The fourth habit is nail biting, skin picking, that kind of thing. And the fifth habit is negative thoughts, emotions, or like ex-girlfriend thoughts and stuff like that. And so we've been hyper-focusing
Where's social media on the list? Isn't there anybody?
Who's number three? I combine that in with
productivity.
Waking up earlier. Waking up early and productivity are kind of tied. And so what we've been doing is trying to figure out from a company standpoint or from the business standpoint, it's interesting. It's like, are we going to – like if all we did was help people quit smoking, if that's all we did, that's a great company. In fact, it's a much simpler company.
Yeah.
But instead I'm like, no, I'm going to cure all addictions, all of them. And also I'm going to form new habits. Also I'm going to make you like learn faster. And so my ADHD-ness is kind of built into our product and into the company. And it's an interesting problem to solve because the way that we're trying to solve it is grotesquely – platforms like based. It's designed to do everything rather than to do one specific thing. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to go down different verticals right now and improve the experience for individual habits.
Yeah. I love this device so much because it is what I consider a perfect example of what I hope is coming, which is the behavioral revolution, which is that we are going to have these smart devices. We know so much about behavior. And mm-hmm. as things happen right now, companies are incentivized to use that knowledge about our behavioral biases and things like that against us to get us to be addicted to Facebook or Twitter I always think of the fact that we have cut cigarette smoking so much in the United States as an incredible feat against market forces that, you know, despite the fact there was so much money to be made that we were able to get all of the interests align to reduce that. So I'm hoping that this will just be one of many devices that helps us invert our behavior and rewards us for doing things that are healthy for us.
Yeah, I like to believe that, man. There's this weird, like, you get it because you used it. Mm-hmm. But the amount of people who, like, it's Pavlok is not the secret sauce to everything. Like, you know, you can't clockwork orange somebody into not liking something, right? Like, you have to want to break the habit. Why can't I just take it off? Well, why don't you just put down the fucking cigarette, right? Like, why don't you just stop eating cookies? Well, because there's parts of your brain that don't work in the same way. Like, part of your brain is living in the instantaneous moment.
I call that the why don't you simply trap. Like, It seems like every time I write a blog post about, I had one that was like, put the apps that are good for you on the front of your
phone. Yeah. Thank you for that, by the way. Phone. Thank you for that.
Oh, yeah. Pavlok was on there. And then I hid Facebook and Twitter on other screens. And then, of course, there's always a few people who have the comment like, why don't you just have more self-discipline? Which is a total myth.
Why don't you get off the fucking comments and go do something productive with your life and stop being a fucking waste of oxygen space? God damn it. I hate those people. Sorry, I really hate those people.
Okay, Manish. Tell us how you really feel.
I'm sorry. I'm sugarcoated it a little bit, but
we need to do a version therapy you out of rants about internet commenters.
Wait till you try selling a product where you're supposed to shock yourself, and then tell me if you don't hate them as much as other people.
Yeah, I mean, I was wondering about that because. I'm sure that you get all sorts of skeptics or it's just such a crazy idea.
So crazy, right? But here's the thing that I get really excited because you reminded me of something.
Yeah.
The behavioral revolution is something that I've been realizing about the relationship between man and technology. And the relationship at the beginning of man to technology was technology is a tool to help us improve whatever we're doing, to help us speed up. And over time, it's changed to where instead of us being the masters, we become the slaves. That the like worst punishment I can imagine is if I don't go to the gym, turn off my internet for 2 hours. Like my life, I can't even imagine what that would be like. And that's one of our punishments we're building out. And I'm like so scared of that one. I don't care about getting shot. I don't care about getting charged money. I'm so afraid of losing internet for 2 hours, right? Why? Because I'm no longer the master of the technology. The technology is the master of me. I've become a slave to the technology. And it's a shift that has rapidly happened since the beginning of the smartphone, beginning of the internet. Like those things have created this whole new relationship towards an addiction to technology in a lot of ways. And until today, we consider the product or the tech to be our slave. We consider that we believe that we are the masters.
Mm-hmm,
but
yes.
It's rapidly flipping. And you know what I'm talking about. What I've been realizing more and more is that I don't need a device to do what I want it to do. I need a device to not let me do what I want it to do because it's not in my best interests, right? Yeah. And so like with this Chrome extension, this is why I'm excited about this because it's not even about releasing it. It's about like, I can't wait to get this fucking thing on my desktop right now. I'm so excited for this. Small, tiny flip that I've been working on, okay? So what I've been working on in my own time is building into that Chrome extension a task list. So you put your daily tasks each day and you put your habitual tasks. Like I want to spend I do it with Pomodoro timers. So you say I will do one Pomodoro timer a day. That's 25-minute dedicated work session. I will do one Pomodoro timer for email every day. I will do two for writing a blog post, et cetera, right? Until today, this is how it's been. You download these apps, these timer apps and these productivity apps and these to-do list apps, right? And then your job is to use the app. So you got to go into the app and then you got to talk to it and type in your to-do lists. And then you got to go there every day. Maybe they'll send a push notification that you can ignore. You got to go in there and turn on the timer, right? So I'm excited because what I've been building out is instead of it waiting for me to hit go, the device every hour sends push notifications on my Chrome extension saying, hey, it's time for you to start doing your work. Are you going to do emails now? Hey, are you going to do emails now? And after noon, it's going to start vibrating my wrist every 15 minutes if I haven't done them. And after 2 p.m., it'll start shocking me repeatedly until I start doing those actual tasks. It'll be like, hey, you said you were going to do this, and now there's actually a repercussion because you're lying. So I'm going to tell you it's fucking time for you to do your emails. You told me yesterday you were going to do it. Yesterday you said you're going to do it, so fucking do it, or else I'm going to electrocute you and turn off your internet, so just fucking do it. And and that like that small flip of it instead of waiting for me to go into it and do the and tell it I'm working on something, I want it to tell me. I want it to be my personal gym trainer. I want it to be my personal email trainer. I want it to be my slapping Facebook Craigslist girl.
So wait, you want to be a slave to the technology? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying I want to. Yes, I don't want to have these like beliefs that I have self-control when realistically I'm just on Reddit and Facebook all the time. I know what's good for tomorrow, Manish.
Yeah.
I know what's good for tomorrow, Manish. And I want to be able to program that in, and then tomorrow's tech will hold me to that. Essentially, I want to build a coach. I want to build a trainer.
Yeah.
The only use case that's common these days is a gym trainer. And it's the only kind of trainer which is like, okay, which is strange. Like life coaching, even I make fun of life coaches, but there's some insane value that life coaches bring, which is the act of being somebody who holds you accountable to something.
Yeah, I mean, like, I love group fitness classes because that I would never kick my own butt that hard.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about this. I mean, it sounds like, personally for me, I don't know if I want something shocking me telling me what to do throughout the day. It sounds like you talk about having ADHD or whatever, and that's like sounds like it's legit for you, right? It's not like you're just saying it. So that, I imagine that's a big part of you.
Yeah.
Starting, I mean, Pavlok and getting so into this.
Definitely. If we talk about, so ADHD, I find to be really interesting because ever since I was a kid, everybody thinks they have ADHD. And the first thing that makes you think is that you're broken. Attention deficit hyperactive disorder, that you have a disorder by starting new things and not showing up on time. Yeah. And in the big five personalities, there's a thing called conscientiousness, which is the act of finishing what you start and being neat, orderly, and on time. And conscientiousness is highly correlated with basically everything good. It's like you live longer, you don't do drugs, you don't have STDs, you get married, you don't get divorced, you don't smoke tobacco, et cetera, right? But there's one thing it's inversely correlated with, and that's creativity. And I started to realize this got really deep because I've always had this giant imposter syndrome for my brother. My brother has always been like the king of the
family.
We'll
just go ahead and say who your brother is. How about that?
My brother's Ramit Sethi from I Will Teach You to Be Rich. And yeah. He's a great blogger, multi-million dollar
New York company. Times bestselling author.
Yeah. I know my mom's favorite child.
High
and,
achiever.
Right. And he's also an investor in Pavlok and a very close person to me. But ever since I grew up, I suffered from this giant imposter syndrome where I would always, ever since I was young, like I wrote a book when I was 13 that became an international bestseller. And the only time I wrote that, it was called Game Programming for Teens. And mm-hmm. The only reason I wrote that book was because the editor of the series said I wasn't allowed to write it. And so he said, you're too young, you're too stupid. I'll never have anybody under 25 write a book. And I wrote 80 pages over the next 3 days and sent it above his head and pretended to be an adult until I got the contract signed. And
wow.
And this book became a bestseller. And then I went to college and I always had this intrinsic goal of success. And that intrinsic goal was very simple. It was just do work. Stop wasting time being distracted. Mm-hmm. And when I blogged while traveling for my old blog, Hack the System, I traveled for like 4 years. And I had one metric of success the entire time. And that metric was write 2 blog posts a week and exercise 3 times a week. And I think I hit that goal maybe twice in 4 years, maybe. And I had literally nothing else to do, right? Literally wow. Nothing else. I was in another country. I had nothing to do. I couldn't get myself to that goal. But then I would write a blog post and then blog posts would go viral. Or I would make money off my blog. And there was this intrinsic imposter syndrome where how am I teaching other people to succeed if I can't fucking get the simplest thing in the world done? I can't even do my dishes, right? Like what is wrong with me? Like what is the problem? And as I started at Pavlok, this one day it hit really darkly. A friend of mine offered to invest in my company and he said, hey man, just send me over like 750 words, just some kind of like executive summary and I'll gladly invest 10K. And I was like, all right, well, I have a 6-hour train ride. So this should be cake, right? 750 words. That's like nothing. So 6 hours later, after the train is over, I haven't even opened up Microsoft Word. And I'm like, I'm not going to sleep until I have finished this article. And in the morning, it's now 7 a.m. I've been awake for like 14 hours working on this product. I've written 130 words. Most of it is animated GIFs. And I'm extremely pissed at myself and frustrated. It's like, it's not like college where I can blame it on me not caring. It's my company. It's easy. It's 750 words. It's $10,000, right? What is wrong with me? Last ditch effort. I pulled out my iPhone. I held it up like this and I recorded like 3 or 4 minutes of me saying what I wanted to say. And I sent that to my intern who had just started working for us from Tufts. And university. And like 45 minutes later, he sent me back basically a final draft. And it clicked at that moment that some people are designed to fill out spreadsheets and other people need to know what spreadsheets need to be filled out. Mm-hmm. People who are productive and successful, they get off Facebook and they do what they want to do. People who are unproductive, they create a company where they build a product that shocks you every time you go on Facebook in order to make you get on task, right? Like the act of like creativity is the opposite of focus by definition.
That's actually, I just had a conversation with John Cunios, a neuroscientist, a couple episodes ago, and was talking about, that very thing, that creativity really is just disparate regions of the brain connecting things that seem to not be connected. And it's because the prefrontal cortex, if the prefrontal cortex is in a weak state, you are more creative. The prefrontal cortex would be involved in impulse control and having some sense of what the future results of what your present actions are and everything.
High conscientiousness and prefrontal cortex activity are highly correlated. Yeah. The more you are able to do what you want to do and be neat, orderly, and on time, the more activity you will emit from your prefrontal cortex. Completely. And it started to click. It was like all this started to make sense that there are ways to improve conscientiousness. There's very proven methods to fix it. You can use drugs. You can use meditation, exercise, improve diet. There is no way to improve creativity. There's no proven way that helps people create a more creative brain. And I realized that I don't have a disorder. I have a fucking superpower.
Sure.
I have the ability to connect disparate objects in different disparate ways and do it in completely different methods that nobody else can see.
And that, especially if you use technology to keep you on track and to help, corral some of the chaos, right?
Yeah, but I actually think it's different. I don't use technology in a proper good way. It still is the bane of my existence. I use other people. I generate ideas is through extroverted intuition. It's basically that I can't come up with a new idea unless I'm speaking it out loud. And so I hire people around me. My entire team is filled with people who are executors. And I will come up with ideas on the fly, and I have to train them to understand that my ideas are not rules. They're coming up with ideas. They're brainstorms. And that when I tell them something and then I come back the next day, I used to have an idea, and then I'd come in the next day. I'd be like, we should make 3,000 units. And I'd come in the next day and be like, we should make 5,000 units. And my team would get scared. And they'd be like, yo, wait, he's changing this every day. I'm like really worried. And I had to explain to them over time that, no, don't listen to me. Unless it's like filled out and given to you as a direct rule or a direct like thing that we both have agreed on and set clear boundaries on, everything I say should not be taken as a fact or a rule. I only can generate thought processes through talking out loud. I've always had really good ideas. I thought they were really good ideas, but I could never execute upon them. When I started bringing people in who could just be like, oh, hey, we should do a webinar. Well, let's do a webinar funnel. Okay, well, a funnel should have this, 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 and this. And then tomorrow it's fucking up. And then the webinar just gets hosted, right? Or the blog just gets written. That's the magic, because a lot of people want to do these things. They just want to be told what to do. They really want to work at a cool company that they respect, and they want to have clear guides on what to do. And I'm on the other hand, I can't physically operate in those contexts. So like from a ADHD perspective, I realized that it's not a disorder. It's a superpower. Thinking of it as a disorder held me back my entire life. And the way that American society is designed is that they kind of – like if you look at the average salaries of personality types in Myers-Briggs, everybody is here. And then there's ENTJ, which is like Ramit's type.
And way more, right, yeah.
Like 1.5x the average salary of the number two type. It's crazy.
ENTJ.
Yeah, it's like the Bill Gates, it's the Tim Cook, it's the people who just execute. They're extroverted and friendly, but they just get things done, the executive.
Unfortunately, I'm an ENTP. If only I could turn that P into a J.
Well, I'm an ENTP too, man. I used to work with one of the leading ADHD researchers in America, and he told me something very interesting. He said, if you look at basically any of the top high growth companies and look at their CEO, that you'll see a consistent amount of severely ADHD people who are the CEOs. But all of them have a COO who sits down next to them, who makes sure the actual things get done. It's like, we should go to space. And then the other guy's like, all right, Richard Branson, calm down. Let's start off with a regular plane. And maybe in 20 years, we'll go to space. Right? It's like the – yeah. And Richard Branson is my personality type as well. It's like the – and yours as well. It's the generation of ideas that comes out through just random brainstorming and random ideas. It's the same. I call it a branching tree structure. I like visualize my thinking as, you know, we're talking about something already in this conversation. We're talking about something that makes us branch to something else. It makes us branch to something else, and vice versa, like that. Right?
Threads, yeah.
Yeah, and like it's just like going on opening tabs on your Chrome browser. Like you go on Reddit, which reminds you that you should open a new tab. That reminds you to go to Facebook, and then you hear a ding, and it opens these tabs, right? And if I meditate, have you ever, I'll usually catch myself in the middle of these branches and like close the tabs and be like, "Come on, man, let's get back to work." But
yeah,
but the idea for Pavlok came in the depths of those branches, and that the idea for Hack the System or the 90 Days Project or anything I've done came from those long branching threads that never got the loop closed. And I think that that's kind of what creativity is. It's allowing the branching tree structure to grow.
I'm reminded of a little piece of the Steve Jobs Stanford commencement address that was always such an instrumental thing for me as guidance, where he talks about you can't connect the dots moving forward, you can only connect them moving in reverse. That you have to follow your curiosity and trust that it'll all work out in the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've followed.
It's true. Yeah. I remember Ryan Holiday wrote an article once that he said about decision making. And he's like, either do it or don't do it. It doesn't really matter. Cognitive dissonance will always tell you that you made the right decision. And I was like, that's actually really insightful.
Yeah.
You look back at it.
Yeah, everything is insightful.
Yeah.
So all this stuff that you were doing with Hack the System and traveling around the world and, you know, working a few hours a week, even though you still couldn't meet your goals and such, did you learn certain skills from that you're using in Pavlok?
Yeah, that's a good question. Steve Jobs always talked about how the 9 months he spent in India was like the revolutionary part of his life, right? And I feel like that's, you know, without a doubt, that 4 or 5 year span of traveling, you know, made me who I am. And I learned a lot about like how you can basically live with no money, how you don't need things, how to be very money conscious and hungry, you can't mess up when you're traveling. Like there's literally no law in most countries. So like one of the biggest things I learned while traveling was the art of storytelling, being able to I used to think I was really weird, especially growing up in high school and then going to college at Stanford, where it was like all these smart people and I was not the kind of focused, dedicated, driven person. I wanted to go to college to party sort of. Mm-hmm. And I always was the weird guy. And it took me going and traveling to realize that actually they're the weird ones. That like, none of us are weird. It's just that there are lots of different kinds of people. And that growing up, I had been segmented into this one class of people. And that being around other people let me become who I am. And it kind of helped me develop these like internal metrics of who I am, which is this guy who does cool stuff.
Yeah, I find that really relatable. I mean, just in my own travels. Mm-hmm. First of all, grew up in Nebraska. Totally was not surrounded by people who were like me. Constantly was like, why do I have to hang out with the people that live in my neighborhood? Like, we don't have anything in common. Through traveling, have definitely found, if you go to a certain place, it brings out a certain aspect of your personality, or you discover that a certain tendency is actually the product of where it is that you're from, and that maybe it's not the most your most natural state. And this idea of there not being rules. I think that there are laws in other countries, but the fact that you kind of have this, that you're not aware of it,
yeah,
suddenly opens up this sense of possibility that makes it feel like, you know, I just find when I'm in my home country, the United States, it just seems like there's rules about everything. And it's
everything.
I find it very constraining.
Mm-hmm.
It's traveling.
It's like I was in India once, and there was this elephant, this temple elephant that comes down the town every day. Yeah. And I was with a friend, and anyway, we wanted to take a ride on the elephant. So my friend went on, took a ride, and then she got off. I got back on, and I'm riding down the street with this elephant, right? And the we passed by a police officer and who was like on foot. And apparently it's illegal to give rides on an elephant in the old city. And so the driver looks at me and he said, so you must jump off the elephant. And I look at him and I'm like, what? You jump off of an elephant. He pulls me up next to this wall. I have to jump off of a moving elephant onto a wall. Then I shimmy down the other side of the wall, get to a bridge, and get away from the police. And I had realized that never once in America have I been in an elephant police chase. But like, like this day, I'm literally running away from a police officer on a goddamn elephant. And I'm like, this is something that would never happen in America. There's like zero chance of that ever happening in America. But like, even if I had been caught, it would have been like, you know, 10 rupee fine or whatever. I found that like, it's not about the law. It's just about the different kinds of people. Like you meet so many different kinds of people and you realize that, that there is no right or wrong. America kind of tells you that like, if you're not making money, then you're wrong. If you are making money, you're right. And that's like it. Yeah. And it's like,
you're never good enough is the basic message.
In the land where any man can be president, anyone who isn't president is a failure. I've always felt that growing up. And it's like when I was doing the travel thing, my whole mindset was on how can I live and retire early? And it took until I started Pavlok to realize how unfulfilling it was, that like the freedom of money. I mean, I started making enough passive income in India. I was making $400 a month on AdSense, and it was like more than enough money to cover all of my monthly expenses. And then I got that up to like, you know, enough money to do it even in America. And it was still like passive revenue. And it was not fulfilling. It's like I wake up and then I do nothing. Is that it? It's like, so when I started to get into Pavlok and then more into personality stuff, I started to realize that for me to feel fulfilled, it has to be not about consuming, not about traveling, not about taking in experiences. It has to be about producing. I can't be the coolest guy at the party who had an elephant, right? It has to be the guy who's building something to better himself and, you know, accidentally other people. But I'm like, it's about, I'm trying to create something to give the world rather than consume.
Yeah, I relate to this very well too. I've managed to build up passive revenue streams and I see it as like freedom stacking. Like every time I made enough money to have some sort of cognitive freedom, then it made me just go deeper on trying to pursue an idea that was closer to my passion, that was closer to me feeling like I had some sense of purpose in what I was doing. And that continues to go today. Is that something that you found? Is that it's almost like as you move up Maslow's hierarchy, and especially if you find a way to rethink your relationship with money, then you start to have these ideas that take that kind of freedom.
Yeah, it's very true. The thing that kind of helped me understand this situation was another personality model called the Enneagram. I don't know if you've looked at it much before, but the idea of it is if you look at Myers-Briggs talks about how does information enter you, like information in the external world, how is it parsed to make you understand that information? That's what the model's about. With Enneagram, it's more about the fears and the values that cause you to do things. And it talks a lot more about nurture rather than nature. It's more about like what your family life as a kid caused you to what your biggest fear was. This was actually mind-boggling to me. So I looked at it. I've never felt fearful. I've always been like a risk taker. I fucking dropped out of college with no money and started traveling. I thought I could do anything. I thought I had no fears. And Enneagram said that your type of your fear is a fear of silence. It's a fear of quieting the brain. It's a fear of standing still. And the best thing to train that is to start, you know, meditating or just like calming down, listening to your breath, just being present. And that like there's a level of – it was crazy to read this because there's like a 9 levels of health for each of the types. And like the lowest 3 are like, you know, bipolar disorder, like really heavy disorders. But if you start reading from the number 6, the bottom of the average, and you go up to the level of healthy on it, it's like reading my entire life, like chronologically. It's like when you're at a lower level of healthiness as a seven, which is who I am, it's like you'll start off like being unable to decide. You like hedonistic. You like to, like it said, if you have the opportunity to try an ice cream, you're going to want a scoop of all of them. Like you want all the flavors. And when I was a kid, I used to go to soda machines and I would get all of the sodas into one soda. But I don't know how deep, if this is still interesting, but it's like, it starts off with that level of like hedonism that becomes, it's like a hedonism that becomes the informed consumer. Like you always are the one to go to for, it said in the book, it's like the one who knows the right pen, the right clothes, the right notebook, the right backpack. And I'm like, are you serious?
Wow, you're lighting up my brain right now. It's like I've got a particular pen that I'll use, particular backpacks, just like nothing else will do because this is the right one. This is
the right one.
Hits all of the things that I value in the right way.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and I made my big first YouTube video was about like me going through my backpack contents. And it was like, this is the only pen I'll write with. This is the only coffee I'll drink and stuff like that. And I was like, well, and it said the big shift. So these are the average levels. And the big shift between average and healthy was stop being the consumer who consumes the right things and being the producer who produces the right things. The big shift was stop taking in information, instead start giving it back. Mm-hmm. And the irony, though, is that my healthiest is not productive. My healthiest level, if I go two steps higher, is the like in the present monk sensation of happiness. It's like lives in the present, lives now. It's like it's like once in a while I'll exercise or I'll meditate, and then I'll go outside and I'll see like a reflection of sunlight in like a puddle, and I'll just like look at it, and I'll just be like in awe of the beauty. Yeah. And it's like that's the like perfect health level for me, which is not, it's just something I can achieve on a day-to-day basis if I meditate enough or exercise enough, but it's not like who I am by any means. Mm-hmm. And so I find that to be really interesting because each of their own types has their own different thing of what healthy is, and identifying that there is no perfect what you should do, but there is a perfect for you. Like, I believe that everybody should live an awesome life, but everyone's definition of awesome can be very different. So like a nurse could be the person who takes care of the most patients and gives the best care. And to her, that is success. And that's amazing. And that's awesome, but it's not awesome to me. I couldn't do that for myself.
Do you, do you think that there's going to be any point where, let's say Pavlok is super successful. I don't know what you, what would constitute success for you, you know, whether there'd be any stopping point, would some of the anxiety sort of alleviate? Would you be able to get more into that other level of health where you were a little more mindful? And the reason I ask is because for myself, like I felt before I wrote Design for Hackers, I felt this real sense of that I had to create something. And I wasn't sure what it was going to be. And then through a lot of experimentation, I mean, I moved away from Silicon Valley just to explore my own brain and then eventually hit on that. So then when Design for Hackers finally came out, I felt this incredible sense of peace. Like mm-hmm. I had kind of done this thing, and I it sounds strange, but I felt like, oh, I could die right now and it would be okay. Now that was like 4 years ago. I'm starting to get antsy again. So,
yeah.
Does that relate to anything you've felt in the past or anything that you think you might feel in the future?
It absolutely does relate. I mean, there are moving goalposts, right? So like my version of success in like 2005 would have been like, can I make $3,000 a month? Like that would have been my version of success of like end game. And it's like, now it's very different, right? Like when I started the company, I was talking about how I looked at my old slide decks and it's like exit strategy. How will I exit Pavlok? We'll sell to Fitbit or we'll sell to Apple. And now I'm like, I wouldn't fucking sell to Fitbit if they gave me $100 billion tomorrow. I would literally say no and laugh in their face. There's not a chance.
Wow.
not a chance in hell. I would never sell to anybody. And it's like, it's weird because like my level of success back then is like I've far surpassed what I ever imagined would happen. But like the goalposts will always move and I'll never be fully satisfied. But I have a very large end game goal that is it's hard to go into it. I think I've talked to you about
actually this, but I don't mean to interrupt too much, but you're really hitting on something that I find relatable or something that I'm seeing, which is you were talking about people wanting to be told what to do, such as your employees, and I've found in the past that I might get a little scatterbrained sometimes and I'll start pursuing different interests, but then when the right big enough opportunity presents itself, such as in the past writing a book, and I'm in the middle of one right now that I'm not gonna yet announce. Then once that big enough challenge presents itself, suddenly I'm able to focus.
Are you able to focus to the end though? Like where you actually are doing the writing and like the actual drudgery parts? Can you do that part too?
Well, I wrote the book.
I mean, yeah, but you wrote the book, but did you get excited? Like, is it easy or is that like a effort?
Okay. And this is something I've worked on since writing Design for Hackers, was that was a very miserable process. Mm-hmm. And it was actually probably the most miserable 6 months of my life. And it made me really reevaluate what my relationship was to my work, and that I want my work to be a source of joy, and that I don't want it to feel like I'm in over my head sometimes, and things like that. So we'll see when I get into the meat of this upcoming project. But I think I've improved that relationship.
And enjoyable and pleasant and happy to do, then everybody does see me writing books these days. Okay. But if it was like easy and fun and pleasurable to write books, as pleasurable as it is to use Facebook or eat cookies, then everybody would be addicted to writing books, right?
Well, yeah, and I've managed to trick myself into finding pleasure in some of the uncomfortable parts that are inherent in creating something. And I think a little bit one of the messages I want to get across this podcast is that, you know, it's not do what you love, it's love your work. It's like find some appreciation, some love for what is inherent in doing something that's kind of hard sometimes.
I completely understand exactly what you mean. I also think that there's different ways, like just for you in particular, to approach the problem. Like there's nothing wrong with having a person who actually does the writing. If you do the audio and tell them what to say, mm-hmm. and let them transcribe it, and then you go back and edit. I found that like my blogging, the last year of Hack the System was like incredible. I had 3 posts up a week. They were damn good. Someone was like, yo man, what have you done to your daily routine? And I'm like, I fucking hired a writer. I don't even write it. You just guess, it's all ghostwritten. And it was way better than my writing. And it's like, not saying you should ghostwrite your book, but there's nothing wrong with coming up with the idea and understanding that you're really good at getting that knowledge out there, and yeah. then just recording it and then hiring somebody to transcribe it for $5 an hour of transcribing, and then just going and editing it, right?
Cause yeah, there's things that you're good at, and there's things that you maybe aren't so good at. And so I think what some people will do is they will delegate the things that they're not so good at. My solution, I think, might be that I've actually discovered that I'm not very good at delegating, even though I worked on it for a couple of years. Part of it is just doing fewer of the things that I wanted to delegate. So doubling down on creating, doubling down on thinking on the parts that I find really pleasurable, and just cutting out some of the other parts of the business.
Yeah. Simplification, man. It's huge, but it's cutting it out or having somebody else do it. But I don't know if that's how your mind works. I don't know if it's certainly not how mine is. It's like, it's just like the more things you do, the more branches it creates. Mm-hmm. And it's like for example, it's like people, there's this GTD idea of like, do something. If it takes you 2 minutes, just sit down and do it. And that is like the most difficult thing in the world, because something that takes 2 minutes creates 20 things that take just 2 minutes to do. It's like answering one email, I'll come up with, oh shit, I should double check this one thing. Like this, like I got to find the right link. And then you go and you find the right link and you're like, oh shit, it only took me 2 minutes to edit the description of this link before I give it to that person.
It also doesn't make the distinction between things that are relevant and worth doing and things that aren't worth doing at all. Things mm-hmm. you should just ignore.
And it's, I don't know, it's just like, it should be so easy to do things. It seems so theoretically simple, but doing is really fucking hard, especially for me. It's like, I can tell other people what to do all day, but like, me trying to sit down and answer emails, man, you should fucking see my inbox. I gave up. I haven't looked at my, I just don't log an email anymore. I just don't. It's gotten so bad that I'm just like, email me if you want, but I don't reply.
Like, email bankruptcy.
I just gave up. It just gets to be too big.
Archive everything that's in the inbox and start over, you know?
I know. I'm at that point right now, man. It's like getting crazy. But Yeah, I don't know. It's really interesting. It's just, I feel like, especially in America, it's this drive that makes us feel like we're lesser than other people if we're not making money. And that to me is so crazy because, and you don't see, I didn't see it until I traveled that there are like, you know, you think of Italy as a place to go on a 2-week vacation, but you don't think that there are like real people there, like doing things. Like they're there to serve food, but they're not real people. And then you go and you live with them and you're like, holy shit, these are like different people who have a completely different mindset of living. I remember I went to a hostel in Colombia in Salento, and there was like 25 people there and there were 3 Americans, and all 3 Americans didn't go out on Saturday horseback riding. All 3 of us sat on the couch wearing Vibram 5-finger shoes working on our fucking blogs. All 100% of the Americans in that location. And I've never met an American who has ever, except for these like, yeah, I've never met an American who has just gone and traveled without knowing what he was going to do when he got back. And not once in 5 years. And I rarely meet an Aussie, an Australian or a Canadian or a European who's like on a gap year or whatever and knows what they're going to do when they get back. Like they figured out.
The joke is also when you do travel and you meet an Australian or somebody from New Zealand or something, that they're definitely on like a year long or 6 month long trip and you're on a 2-week trip or a 3-week trip or something like that.
Yeah.
And just like the level of depth that is being missed out on by that quote unquote travel is just astounding.
It's astounding. It's like not a trip. It's like you can't really explain it. It's just like you're going on a 2-week trip. Your mind is still. So I don't know if you know, I lived in the wilderness for 28 days in October, in 2011. I don't know if you know about this.
You might have told me about it, but I'd love to share it with everybody.
So I lived in the wild for 28 days. It was a 28 day, no backpack, no sleeping bag, no tents. We basically ate 1,000 calories a day. We hiked 15 miles a day. I lost like 28 pounds or something.
Wow.
And it was like a Boulder outdoor survival school. And I actually journaled every single day on the trip. And I reread those journals every once in a while. And it's fascinating because you can see what I was thinking about. And it was like the first 5 days I was thinking about emails, Facebook, that stuff. Like, how am I going to deal with all that when I get back? 6 days or so, it was like that. But as it got to the end of 6 days or so, my mind, my questions started to care about like my family and like my friends. And like, I rarely think about those things. And it's like, but those things are like the things that matter once you stop thinking about tweets and dings and notifications. And I wrote this article, and my favorite I've ever written, about when we had 5 days of it was alone in a cave. Everybody had their own space. And in those 5 days, I wrote more blog articles than I wrote in 2 years of travel because there was no distraction. I just sat down. I woke up every morning. I found some prickly pears and I started writing. And like that, like was a big mindset shift for me, where it was discovering that it's that I'm addicted to distraction. It's that distractions are everywhere. And it's, if you get away from distraction, that's the only way that people like me can create.
So did those days in a cave give you some sort of a handhold you can grab onto when you're needing to focus?
I wish I were better about it, man. I know with 100% efficacy exactly how to make myself focus. But the fact that I don't, it speaks to, I don't know. But like, I know the specific tactics. Put me in a cave or put me anywhere without internet, man. Fucking put me anywhere without internet. I don't know what life is like. I haven't done it in like probably 3 months. Been like away from internet for like an hour even. Like, it's hard. You know the app Freedom? The app that turns off your internet?
I've heard of it.
So it's this app that lets you turn off internet and it's like impossible to get out of it. And you can set it for 45 minutes and your internet turns off, right? I've spent more time with the mouse depressed upon the button, hovering with the okay. Like I pushed in and click and like don't release it. I've spent more time like that than I actually have with the app running. Like intending to press the button, but I just can't let go of that last like, I won't have internet for 45 minutes. It's like the end of the world. so I know turning off distractions would work for me. I know bets work really well for me. So I make a lot of bets, and then if I don't achieve them, I owe money. Accountability partners work really well. I try to optimize more and more, but I've actually found the simplest solution has been to hire people to just do the work I don't want to do.
Yeah. And I think probably for most people, they don't have the gift that you do, right? Of this constant distraction. They don't need quite as many different devices to to overcome it. But you're able to take everything that you're learning from this and put it into this company, Pavlok.
Yeah.
Go really rapid fire here.
Let's do it.
What was the last book that you read that changed the way you saw something?
I read a book called, what is the most recent book I've even read? I read a book called The Revenue Growth Habit, which was interesting. It talked about in 15 minutes a day, there's a lot of changes you can make for a business, and that then it gave you 28 or 30 different things you could do in 15 minutes a day that would have big changes on your business. And that book was really interesting. It made me think of a different way to grow revenue in the company.
Do you make your bed?
I just started.
Oh, really? How's it going?
It's great. I just started using Pavlok to wake me up, the alarm clock. And suddenly I wake up like alert at 6 a.m. every morning. And I get up and I make my bed. And then I start I actually start reading again. So that's been cool.
Do you have a final message for any of our listeners who are trying to carve out their own success, their own version?
Yeah. Find out, like, look to yourself to figure out moments in your day when you feel in flow and optimize for those moments. Like, I used to think that I was escaping by going out and meeting people at networking events or going out for drinks. And I realized that I wasn't escaping, that I discovered I'm in flow when I talk to new people in person. And that what I wanted flow to be was sitting in front of a piece of paper, writing or working, like the classical idea of flow being working on a project. But external interactions can be a project as well. So don't feel like you're – so look, optimize for those feelings when you just didn't notice how fast the time passed. That's what you want to build your life around.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And where can our listeners find you and Pavlok?
Yeah, just go to www.pavlok.com. That's PAVLOK.com. And we just released two new products, actually. The Pavlok device has been around for a while, and it costs $200, but we have a $99 Pavlok shocking alarm clock, which is just the alarm features that had an alarm clock feature. And we have a $99 Pavlok light, which is just self-administered shock for breaking bad habits, just like Kadavi did with quitting Facebook.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to focus and have this conversation with me today, Manish. I think it'll be helpful for a lot of people. So, there we have it. Before I go, I gotta ask, do you like books? If you do, I'd love to send you my book recommendations. About 90% of them will be nonfiction on subjects spanning from biographies to neuroscience. Just go to kadavi.net/reading, sign up, and you'll get my first set of recommendations right away. You'll be supporting the show if you buy any of those books through the links in the email. This has been Love Your Work, and I'm David Kadavi. The theme music for this show is See In You, performed by The Album Leaf, courtesy of Sub Pop Records. Love Your Work is a production of Kadavi, Inc.